From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 12th day of June, 2025. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Extension's Tuck Gleason. Coming up, we'll review this morning's World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates figures with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. We'll hear from the CEO and Chief Financial Officer at ExxonMobil and some comments he made during a German Marshall Fund conference held yesterday and the day in Brussels, Belgium. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Mike Tenora on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.38.5, a penny and a half higher. December at $4.40.5, three quarters higher. July soybeans down 8.25 today. Settlement price at $10.42.25 a bushel. November new crop down 2 cents at $10.27.25. Bean meal up 30 cents. The bean oil 41 cents lower. July wheat soft red down 7.75 at $5.26.5. And the hard red July at $5.22.75 down 3.75 cents. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Can you recap the June USDA WASD figures for us from this morning and what you thought were the most important numbers from it?
Yeah. So you look at the corn report, and quite frankly, AgMarket, we actually predicted a 1.365 and 1.750, which is what the USDA came out with. We got kind of lucky again, but we are in agreement with the USDA that demand continues to grow. The only thing I think is a caveat moving forward is what new crop demand might look like with that huge South American crop. But as far as today's report went, hey, we just tightened up once again. No changes to the bean report. It was interesting to note that the USDA did not adjust Brazilian corn production, which, you know, they've been at that 129 fairly high number for a while, 129, 130. And so they didn't feel the need to adjust it higher, even though, you know, the Safrina crop has clearly grown in most people's eyes over the last month or two. So to be honest, it wasn't a real active report. I think a lot of folks, as soon as they saw the numbers, already started thinking about the June 30th planted acreage report, to be perfectly honest with you.
And so let's look forward to that report. It's not only the acreage report, but the grain stocks numbers. Start with acreage. Do you think corn or soybean numbers will be changed?
Yeah, I don't really think we're going to see a lot in the way of changes. I think there's clearly been some areas that could be going to prevent plant. We know that Ohio, down through the Delta, parts of southern Illinois, Indiana, Tennessee, and Kentucky, certainly would be labeled as areas that you could consider some prevent plant. But at the same time, you know, what's it going to look like in the West or in northern Illinois or Iowa? You know, there's no doubt that there was areas that were able to get out and run with a nice dry spring. And you've got to assume some of those acres could have gone to corn, because at the time, corn penciled better than soybeans. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of changes there on quarterly stocks. It remains to be seen. Demand's been awfully good. Ethanol numbers were just fantastic this week. Big drawdown in ethanol stocks as well. Yeah, you've got to assume with where the exports are running, which is 96% of what USDA's new number was as far as today goes, that you're going to continue to see there's been a big drawdown in stocks. And so it's interesting that some folks, like, for instance, in North Dakota, are seeing a 50, 60, 70 over basis, whereas people are seeing the opposite of that in Indiana, Ohio, and to the east. And so I do think there's areas of the Corn Belt that's got a lot of corn. I just don't think you're going to get any bearish stock surprise June 30th, because there's areas that have no corn.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what producers should do and the things that they consider moving through this month of June. As it's related to the stocks report and the number of acres that have been put into the ground, particularly in the eastern part of the Corn Belt, farmers in parts of southern Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio will be looking at very late planted crops. Maybe you can give me an update on what you think those might be and how they would impact the marketplace and basis in those levels or in those areas.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that you're going to see strong basis levels all the way into harvest in those parts of the world. And coincidentally, those are the areas that have been hardest hit. as far as how many corn acres might have gotten into the ground, especially in what you would call optimum conditions. So it could be a situation where people get blessed somewhat by a really strong basis. At the same time, you don't know what the board is going to do, but bottom line is to get corn out of the farmer's hands, whether it's old crop or new, that part of the world has certainly had to do a little more work when it comes to basis. And so I've got to think that growers overall have to still be a little bit patient, see if this weather plays out into their favor. It's really tough for a grower right now to sell sub $4 cash fall corn and sub $10 cash fall beans and feel good about it. And so I just as soon see what Mother Nature's going to deal us here, especially for those that were aggressive on crop insurance. I don't know that there's a ton of incentive to step in here and get aggressive as far as sales go.
Tell me why that's the case.
Well, I mean, ultimately you're protected. I mean, 85%, of course, is lower than where we're at today when you verse the 470 spring price. But some folks had add-on features and they've got a higher yield protected than others. At the same time, when you move forward, do you want to, at this point in the marketing year, lock in a loss? And so, unfortunately, the vast majority of growers would be doing just that unless they assume a massive yield. So if you sell now, and let's say Mother Nature does come in and decide to maybe set in with a dry situation earlier than it did a year ago, if you don't, if you're selling now, you're assuming massive production. And a lot of us are looking at really good prospects. But if you don't get that huge production and you're oversold and then the market marches higher, you got to be cautious. The funds are short, probably around 200,000 contracts of corn, 150 to 200. If we have weather, Todd, they're going to do more than cover that short. They're going to go long. So I want to stay very flexible in how we market this crop.
And there is time, at least through the month of October, for this natural put that you have in place.
Yes, absolutely. So you're protected essentially, half to two-thirds of the way into October. That's pretty much set as far as those decent NOV averages go.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. House of Representatives is set today to vote on H.R. 4, which would cut funding for USAID and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or PBS and NPR. The federal funding supports some 1,500 broadcast stations around the nation, including the WillAg.org agricultural programming that originates from Illinois Public Media here on the U of I campus and Market to Market from Iowa Public Television. Congress has less than 45 days to act on the bill if it is to reach President Trump's desk. It includes a rescission of already appropriated funding for both PBS and USAID. Well, yesterday, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins was in front of the House Agriculture Committee, where she was asked by Illinois Representative Nikki Budzinski about USAID funding that has already been subject to the Trump administration's DOGE cuts.
Madam Secretary, I ask you to please look into the importance of the Soybean Innovation Lab for American agriculture. Is that something that you would be willing to take a look at?
Yes, I'd be very willing to do that and follow up.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, thank you, Secretary. Thank you. I yield back.
Budzinski told Rollins during the hearing that the research the Soybean Innovation Lab does not only supports developing nations, but it supports domestic growers through the development of soybean genetics in a way that maintains the U.S. farmers' global dominance in the soybean market, and that it introduces brand new international markets to American products. Let's turn now to the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. According to recent data, it says U.S. sales of combines and tractors dropped in all categories during the month of May. Total agricultural sales were down 12%, and combine sales were down 21%. The biggest drop came in four-wheel drive tractor sales, which were off by nearly 40% last month. Self-propelled combine sales were down 21% in the United States. In contrast, Canadian combine sales rose 16% year over year in May, and the sales of four-wheel drive tractors were up 35%. And finally today, the price of a barrel of oil has moved into the mid-$60 range this week. Patrick DeHaan with Gas Buddy says last week's solid U.S. jobs report encouraged oil investors.
As well as now China and U.S. Authorities meeting together to discuss trade. The trade talks ongoing have boosted the optimism that the economy may be starting to grow again in the months ahead. Potentially seeing a less of a risk in tariffs if the U.S. and China can come to some agreement.
DeHaan thinks the American economy is in a decent place right now, which is why the oil prices moved higher at the beginning of the week. He adds he's expecting the stability to stick around for the foreseeable future.
I don't really see any reason that oil prices would break out and go above 70. Not really a whole lot of reasons that oil would go down below about 60 or $58 a barrel. So I think we'll continue to see prices relatively range bound unless there are, you know, seismic shifts in the global economy or tariff policy. That is one of the things we'll be watching for this summer.
The Gas Buddy analyst added now that the eastern half of the country is in hurricane season, that could impact oil prices as well, especially if a strong storm hits key locations. When it comes to fuel prices, DeHaan noted diesel prices are at the lowest levels reported since October of 2021, and gas prices are around $3 per gallon nationally. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Because both corn as ethanol and soybean potentially as SAF or as soybean diesel or renewable diesel are both intertwined with the energy sector of the global economy, I thought it'd be interesting to listen to Darren Woods today, who's the chief executive officer and chairman at ExxonMobil. He was speaking yesterday at the German Marshall Fund conference in Brussels, where he started by saying that diversification was key to the company's success.
I don't think that as a company, we bet on any one place in the world being the bedrock of our company. Instead, we recognize the importance of diversification, not only in the businesses that we invest in, the products that we make, but also in the places that we do business.
ExxonMobil, by the way, is the largest producer of oil and gas in the United States. It's based in Texas. The CEO was asked how he navigates the political cycles that are taking place in the United States and in Europe.
Well, I think if I look at what's happening in the U.S., what's been happening in Europe, frankly, my perspective on a lot of the policy that's come out, particularly in the area of climate change, hasn't been linked to fundamentals. We've had ideology out there driving a lot of the thinking behind that and leading to a lot of the policy that, frankly, on both sides of the Atlantic have been flawed. And coming back to what is it that's going to ultimately allow society to significantly reduce emissions, address the risk of climate change, and at the same time support economic growth, to recognize that there are 4 billion people in the world that are living in intense energy poverty and striving for a better life, that how do you address those needs? And so coming back and thinking about how is the world going to tackle this significant challenge and do it in a way that doesn't force choices that, frankly, most societies and communities around the world won't be willing to make. You've got to do it affordably. You've got to do it in a way that doesn't impede economic growth and doesn't ask people to lower their standards of living and don't prevent others from rising and having a better standard of living. There are ways to do that. We refer to it as the AND equation.
That AND equation under diversification, says Darren Woods, has ExxonMobil looking at itself as not an energy company, but a technology company, where they're already making moves to include more than just combustion-based products, things for electric vehicles, clothes, makeup, and much more. But it also includes looking forward in ways to decarbonize, particularly as it's related to the electricity that will power AI server farms.
And the question I think facing every economy is how, and certainly in the U.S., is how do you support that growth enable the development of AI, which I think, rightly so, people are seeing as an incredibly important competitive dynamic as well as a national security dynamic. And so there's a lot of aspects which lead, I think, every country to think hard about developing that capability and maintaining some level of competitiveness around the world in those different spaces.
So here's how ExxonMobil is addressing those issues.
We're a very big producer. In fact, we're the largest U.S. producer of oil and gas, and most of it's coming out of the Permian Basin, so unconventional oil that many of you, I'm sure, have heard about. We made a commitment several years ago to take the production of our Permian fields to net zero for scope 1 and scope 2, for those of you who are familiar, for the emissions that we generate and the emissions that we cause to be generated in supporting our business. We're going to take that to net zero. So we are developing decarbonized natural gas from a production development standpoint. We also have invested in the world's only large-scale end-to-end carbon capture, storage, and transportation system. So there's no other company in the world that has the ability to capture, transport, and store CO2 at the scale that we do in the Gulf Coast of the U.S. So we have a decarbonized natural gas, and we have a system for capturing emissions and transporting and storing them. And we are taking the combination of those two things and offering opportunities for the technology companies to build data centers in the Gulf Coast of the U.S. to take advantage of these endowments to basically have virtually decarbonized low-carbon data centers.
Darren Woods is the Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of ExxonMobil. He made his comments yesterday at a German Marshall Fund conference that took place in Brussels, Belgium. In context, it might be worth considering how the carbon pipelines in the northwestern part of the United States, and even transitioning here into Illinois, might be considered as it relates to the carbon markets, data centers, and why, for instance, the governor of Iowa just this week vetoed a bill that would give farmland owners eminent domain protection from pipeline builders. Check the global growing regions with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us again this week.
Hey, Todd. Thanks a lot for having me. Always great being here.
Begin here in the United States and discuss the growing regions across the Corn Belt and into the Northern Plains.
Well, I think the big story for corn and soybeans is that we have a lot of rain that's on the way over the next 5 to 10 days. We have a couple of waves of energy that'll pass over the next 2 to 3 days. And then there's several more behind that. So we think that between all of this, we're going to see a pretty good dumping of rainfall over the period of time that we're discussing here through next week. So let's just say anywhere from a half of an inch on the low side to 2.5 inches on the high side. And with everybody else, or most people, pretty much in between there. So if that happens like we expect, then we'll have nice soil moisture going into the end of June. The only thing that we have a tiny bit of concern about regards to the temperatures, it's been a little bit cool here and there over the last 1 to 2 weeks, and that'll continue into next week. But once we get beyond Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, it should turn quite a bit warmer, and we even might see some heat in southern growing areas. And when we talk about heat, we're talking about high temperatures in the mid-90s to low 100s. That will primarily be in Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, though there are some signals that that could extend into Arkansas and maybe even parts of far southern Arkansas and southern Illinois. So we'll be watching that. But even if that does happen, it's only the middle of June. So warm and hot weather at this time of the year is generally beneficial. I know producers are out there saying that they could use a little bit of heat to get the crop moving along. And that looks to be on the way once we get 1 to 2 weeks out. The concern is that if that were to last, now, if you have heat at the end of June, and especially once you're in the beginning of July, that's a different story. But we're not going to outforecast the weather here. In the near term, we have quite a bit of rain on the way over the next week, then a lot warmer. And generally, that should be beneficial for corn and soybeans with any concerns over hot weather coming after that period of time.
Let's turn your attention to wheat across the planet, in the Northern Hemisphere in particular. Can you start with the wheat crop in the United States? What worries might you have? And then we'll move to Russia and Ukraine.
Well, the spring wheat story is pretty fascinating. We had a major rain event around May 15th, and that's what contributed to those very low condition ratings. The proportions of spring wheat that were rated good and excellent a couple of weeks ago were pretty low, one of the lower on record to start the season. Since then, the ratings have been coming up, and that's been because of the lack of rain since then. So all those wet conditions have gone away, and now they have somewhat dry conditions. But they're starting to flip over to the level of concern because it basically hasn't rained since then. And if this lasts another 2 weeks, now we're right in the middle of the key part of the season, and it's been dry and it stays dry. Now, we think there are going to be thunderstorms around, so that's kind of negating the story a little bit. Even though it will be a lot warmer in the northern plains, it also should be wetter. We're seeing some rain today, and we think this is the part of the newer pattern that's developing. If you move further north into Canada, they did not get that big rain in the middle of May, and they're basically in a drought. And that includes pretty much 75% of the spring wheat and the canola crop in Canada. Now, if we don't see rains there, again, big problem ahead, but it looks like we're going to tap into some decent thunderstorms, not only over the next few days, but next week and possibly even the week after that. So, Todd, if this whole forecast changes dramatically and we have to pull all these rain chances out, then we'll have a real story there. But right now, you know, we're kind of looking at the train coming at the crop and saying, you know, we've got a problem here, but at the same time, there's a lot of thunderstorms looming around, and we think those are going to hit before everything turns into a problem.
Now, the bulk of the wheat is grown in the northern hemisphere on the planet. That makes Europe and Russia, Ukraine, France all really important. Can you update me on those regions?
Well, it looks to us like they're having a pretty fantastic season in Ukraine and Russia and much of Eastern Europe for that matter. You might recall that back in February and March, we were concerned about a drought there. But ever since we got into March, and especially April and May, we've seen some really nice rains. And it's also been very cool in recent weeks, and that cool pattern is going to last right into the end of the month. So that region is very likely having a great crop. If you move further west into Germany and Poland, they didn't tap into the rains as quickly as Ukraine and Russia did, but they have shown up over the last couple of weeks, and that's taken some of the pressure off of their crop more than likely. The only problem that we can see is in France. And you have to keep in mind that France is the top producer in Europe of wheat, but they've never really gotten in on the rain action. It's going to be unusually warm there over the next 1 to 2 weeks. And so we think that, you know, some problems are ahead for the France wheat crop, and they very likely already have some problems. But it'd be a lot different story if it hadn't been raining from Germany onto the east and without this seemingly ideal setup in Russia and Ukraine for wheat development. So kind of a mixed bag there, Todd, but this would be much more concerning for France and for the whole, you know, wheat region if we weren't seeing rains and cool weather outside of that country.
Thank you much, Mike. Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Joined us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.